The Tom Woods Show, episode 1038.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you're living in terror of your SJW boss and colleagues, it's probably time to start a side hustle online. And as somebody who's self-published books, created a successful podcast, been a successful affiliate marketer, and many other things, I can tell you step by step what to do. And as a matter of fact, I've done that in my free ebook, Five Paths to an Online Income. Check it out at pathstoincome.com. Hello, everybody. Tom Woods here. Today, I am sharing with you an oldie but a goodie. This is an interview I did with the great Walter Williams 5 years ago, actually more like 5.5 years ago, when I was filling in for Peter Schiff on the now defunct Peter Schiff Show. He now does a podcast, but it used to be a daily 2-hour radio show, and I used to fill in for Peter. And a bunch of you folks listening right now first heard me when I was filling in for Peter. So that was a really great gig that I had there. And Walter Williams has been on the Tom Woods Show a couple of times since then, but I just stumbled upon this from the other day. I listened to it and I thought, this thing's good. This deserves another shot at life here. So that's what I'm giving it. Walter Williams, as many of you know, has been a syndicated columnist for I don't know how long, but I remember in high school I was reading him. He is a professor of economics at George Mason University. He's written many books, the first of which that I read was The State Against Blacks, which is a tremendous book. In this particular conversation, we focus in on a more recent title of his, Race and Economics, subtitle How Much Can Be Blamed on Discrimination. So here we go, a blast from the past with Woods guest hosting the Peter Schiff Show. Here we go. Professor Williams, thanks for being here.
Good morning. Good morning.
I'd like to start. I want a bunch of things to talk about, but let's talk a little bit about your. It's a short book, but packed with information and race and economics. It kind of reminds me of the Thomas Sowell book, Civil Rights, Rhetoric, or Reality, but that's over 25 years old now, 27 years old, in the sense that it's short, but it packs a greater punch than some 700-page books I've read. What's the subtitle of the book is How Much Can Be Blamed on Discrimination. What's your overall thesis here?
Well, I think that discrimination is it's overused in explaining the problems that the Black Americans face and people around the world who happen to face a hard time because for whatever reason. I think that when people talk about racial discrimination, we have to say, well, look, people will not pay any price to discriminate. So we say, well, what kinds of laws lower the cost of discrimination? And I spend one chapter talking about the various labor laws. If you look at the unemployment rate among blacks and black teenagers, it's unprecedented in U.S. history. And you look back in the 1940s and the 1930s, black unemployment was less than white unemployment. So how do you explain the big difference between today and yesteryear? Well, you surely can't say, well, gee, back in 1930s, 1940s, there was less discrimination than there is today. Or you can't say that, well, gee, blacks were more highly educated than whites in 1940, and that explains why they had a lower unemployment rate. That would be just plain nonsense. It turns out that a law like the minimum wage law, that explains much of the unemployment rate, particularly among black teenagers. That is, what the minimum wage law does, it prices people out of the market. It prices low-skilled people out of the market. And who are the low-skilled people in our labor force? Well, they're teenagers in general. They lack the experience and maturity of adults. And then in that group is black teenagers who not only share the handicaps of teenagers in general, but they share the additional handicaps of going to getting fraudulent education in the government schools, right, and coming from many most often from broken homes.
You
should not be surprised to see that black teenage unemployment is much higher than white teenage unemployment, and that teenage unemployment in general is higher than adult unemployment.
I think one of the problems that you and others have identified in dealing with issues like this is that instead of looking at an issue like the minimum wage or licensing or whatever, and seeing what the impact of that might be on these particular demographic patches of poverty. Instead, there are all these targeted programs specifically to help blacks or specifically to help the urban poor, when it would be much better to engage in general policies that would more or less lift everybody, but disproportionately lift people, people who are black. But it's not a feather in a black leader's cap to do that.
Oh, yeah, well, I think you're absolutely right that people focus on the wrong thing, and they want to focus on discrimination. But as I say, as I suggest in the book, discrimination does not explain as much as people say it explains. For example, if you look at the taxicab industry, do a comparison between New York City and Washington, D.C. Well, you see that in New York City, relatively few taxis are owned by blacks, but in Washington, D.C., all of them are owned by blacks. And so you say, well, how can you explain that? Is Washington, D.C. just a wonderful city? No way in the world. It turns out that in May of 2007, a taxi license sold for $600,000 to own and operate one taxi. And I understand recently it's been $1 million. And so, but in Washington, D.C., you can get a license to own and operate a taxi for less than $200. And that explains it.
Let me switch gears, though. I want to ask you a hard question, given that we have limited time with you. I want to ask you a hard question, and it's one you've gotten before, but I want to hear your best answer. Now, if you're a strict libertarian, as I am, then you believe in no initiation of force. And sometimes that puts you in the unhappy position of having to defend complete jerks. And so my question involves the Civil Rights Act of 1964, specifically the issue of provisions on private property. If I've got a shop and I want to have a sign that says no redheads can come into my shop, I mean, most of us, I think, don't want to live in a society where people are doing this. So we recoil at that. What do you say about that? Is it at some level, is it necessary for government to intervene and say, look, we'll tolerate a lot of crazy behavior in this country, but not telling blacks that they can't sit at this lunch counter?
I think if it's private property, then the suggestion of private property is that you have the right to exclude. And that's one of the, basic features of private property. If I don't want any white people in my house, that's my right. And I think that my right should be extended is that if I own a restaurant, and if I don't want to serve white people, that's my right. It might be offensive to people. But again, it's the question of private property rights. Now, it's kind of an interesting thing. You did say, yeah, those kind of behaviors, we would agree they're despicable. But, you know, during the Jim Crow era in our country, we had laws saying that, well, gee, black people couldn't do this, or black people could not come in the front door, you had to have separate seating areas in theaters. And so you say, look, if you see a law on the books, I think one of your suspicions should be is that that law is on the books because not everybody would behave according to the specification of the laws. And so what that says is that if it were not for these laws and extra legal acts, that restaurants would have served blacks, or that many restaurants would have served blacks. And matter of fact, it turns out a colleague of mine, Dr. Roback, she did study on trolley cars in New Orleans, and I believe in several other cities. And when they were private, and the private owners did not want to discriminate against the black customers, and they were forced by law to have separate seating areas in their trolley cars. They did not want to do it voluntarily.
Yeah, this is stuff that basically nobody knows about. You guys, we're listening. We're talking to Professor Walter Williams here on the Peter Schiff Show. We got to go to a quick break. On the other side of that break, we're going to get the Walter Williams Program for Prosperity right here on the Peter Schiff Show, the gold standard in talk radio. Stick around. We are indeed back here on the Peter Schiff Show. Tom Woods in for Peter, joined by Professor Walter Williams, author most recently of Race and Economics, How Much Can Be Blamed on Discrimination. Professor Williams, you won't remember this, but back in the early 1990s, 92 or 93, you got into a little bit of trouble on the Rush Limbaugh program when you were
alleging that that Harvard Medical School was engaged in affirmative action and that they were putting through people who wouldn't otherwise have gotten through. And you got into a storm of trouble from Harvard Medical School. And I was at a Harvard undergraduate at the time, so I wrote a column for our little conservative magazine defending you. I called you up, and you offered to send me a photo of yourself to put in there with the article. So we did do that. So you and I have a history you may not even be aware of.
Oh, my God. Going back 1992. My goodness.
That's quite.
And that's my first year substituting for Rush.
Oh, isn't that great? Yeah, well, you jumped right in with both feet. All right, let's. Yeah. I actually want, if you don't mind, we've got a call that looks like it's specifically for you. So if you don't mind, let's go to the phones
okay. And
talk to Dale in San Francisco. Dale, welcome to the Peter Schiff Show.
Hi, thank you. I don't want to swell Walter Williams' head too much more, but it's very much an honor to speak to him. I did want to ask a question about the idea that there may be two types of liberal blacks, and one type would be the kind that truly feels victimized by circumstances and feels that that society as a whole should compensate them in some way for past injustices. But then there might be another type of a black liberal that might understand intellectually and they actually maybe even agree with the libertarian position about racial aspects in America, but finds that there's no political gain to be had by acknowledging that and is deliberately using that merely to gain an advantage of the system. I think we saw a little bit of that even in the recent tiff between Gingrich and Romney about Romney saying that he doesn't care about the poor. I mean, you clearly understood that Romney wasn't saying that he literally didn't care about the poor, but that the poor weren't contributing to productive society, and that he was worried about the contributing members, the middle class, having their earnings sucked away by taxes. But what about this idea that there might be two types of black liberals, one that truly feel victimized and the other that are only in it for the political advantage?
Well, okay, yeah, thanks for the call.
There, and I think it also applies to white people too. Yeah, that is, there are a lot of whites around that benefit from the victimization vision of the world, and the whole idea that people should be compensated for injustices of the past. I think that is horrible. That is, there is nobody. There's no white person living who owned a slave. And there's no black person living who was a slave. And so if you're talking about reparations, you're going to have to do that up in heaven or hell, wherever the people are. And but nobody's living. And so in a sense, what people are saying is let's help individual A by punishing individual B for what individual C did to individual D some years ago.
Indeed.
Which is a perverse form of justice.
Now, let's shift gears a bit and talk just in general. Did you happen to hear the other day Ben Bernanke warning about cutting the deficit too fast and the dangers of that?
No, I did not hear, but I don't listen to the guy.
No, nor would I, but number one, the fact that he would think there's some risk that we might cut the deficit too fast shows he's living in some other world. But of course, I'm pretty sure it's the standard sort of argument that we have to hold up government spending, otherwise the economy will get even worse. I mean, what's your general response to that?
Well, I doubt whether that would be the case. I mean, the economy would improve significantly, but I think that he might be talking about there might be riots in the street, because when you take somebody, one of the things that you have with babies is getting them to eat on their own as opposed to nursing on the mother, and they get pretty upset when you try to wean them away. But see, I think that one of the things that people never look at in terms of government interference and government regulation in our economy, I mean, we went as a nation from 1787 until 1930, and during that interval, we've had depressions, we had recessions, as a matter of fact, they call them panics sometimes, and nobody ever thought that the federal government should intervene in a Keynesian fashion or to, you know, to stimulate the economy. And it wasn't until the Hoover administration, and then followed up by Roosevelt and other presidents since then, where somebody thought that we should intervene. And the intervening caused, you know, let's say in the 1930s, when the government intervened with the New Deal, well, that caused a, what would have been, that turned what would have been a 2 or 3 year sharp downturn in the economy, it turned it into a 10-year affair.
It seems to me that if the exact opposite had been the case, I mean, let's suppose the government had been involved in all those panics, but then in the Great Depression decided to take a laissez-faire view, well, they'd be telling us all the time, see what happens when you take a laissez-faire view? The Depression went on year after year after year. But of course, when they get involved, well, there's always some excuse and some reason. I want to, before we get out of here, I want to ask you a little bit about the GOP race, you know, depressing as it is to talk about. What are your thoughts about it right now?
Well, they, what they're doing, they're standing in a circle shooting at each other. And so,
so it's not altogether a bad thing considering who they are. But all
right. Right. But see, I think that, you know, we can't blame politicians too much. We have to blame the American people, because politicians are doing precisely what the American people want them to do. They elect them to office to do, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, and they elect them to office to use the power of their office to take what belongs to one American and bring it back to them.
That's true. On the other hand, the Americans, you know, the voters, are educated in the government schools that teach them to think this way. So it's a vicious circle.
You're absolutely right. And so what we have to do, people like you and many others who are libertarian, free market type radio people, we have to somehow sell our fellow Americans on the moral superiority of personal liberty and its main ingredient, limited government.
Now, in 2008, I read somewhere that you briefly entertained the possibility of running for political office. Is that true?
No, people have been pushing me to do that, but I'm flattered when my fellow Americans suggest I do that. But I always tell them that that to run for political office successfully, I would have to rise above principle and do the right thing. And I prefer remaining outside so I can be honest with my fellow Americans.
No, that is true. I think it's because we want to see you in the debates. That's what we're craving. We want to see you mop the floor with these people. It would be such fantastic political theater and great education for the public. Now, in 2008, though, I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot. You endorsed Ron Paul. Are you prepared to do that again this time?
No, I'm not endorsing anybody, and I don't know whether I'd never endorse anybody. I endorse their ideas.
Okay.
If they have a good idea, because people change.
Who do you think has the best ideas then?
Well, I think from the domestic point of view, I think that Ron Paul clearly has the ideas far more in keeping with the founders of our country. I'm a little bit suspicious of the foreign policy, because we live in an ugly world.
Well, that's true, but given that we've got only about a minute left, there's no way to really hash this out. I just want to tell you that you have been such a source of knowledge for me over the years. You've helped me win so many debates. I got my copy of The State Against Blacks signed by you in 92 when you spoke at Harvard as part of an IHS event. Now, you don't remember any of this, but for somebody who looks up to you, I do remember this stuff.
Well, you know, your memory goes, you know, I've been alive one third of the time our country's been in existence, and there's a downfall to that. There's a downside to that.
I never thought of that percentage way of looking at things, but Walter Williams, I want to thank you very much for taking some time with us today on the Peter Schiff Show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, and good luck.
Thank you. Walter Williams, everybody.
All right, that's it for today. Now, what's coming up? I got some great stuff coming up. Later this week, Michael Malice comes back to the show. It's been much too long. I have to check in with Lou Rockwell one of these days, see what's going on with him. But I've also got Pete Leeson coming on to talk about his brand new book called WTF, An Economic Tour of the Weird. Seamus Coughlin, the animator behind Freedom Tunes, comes back. We got a lot of fun stuff coming up for you. So if you haven't subscribed to the Tom Woods Show, I'm telling you, I don't know why you're doing this to yourself when you could get free libertarian goodness every single weekday. So check it out at TomWoods.com. In particular, TomWoods.com/episodes is really where you want to go. TomWoods.com/episodes. Because I'm telling you, you look through that 1,038 episodes, you're going to find a few things you want to know more about. And it's just the knowledge is a click away. What a world we live in. Thanks, everybody. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.